All right. By the way, Rahab, that's the correct pronunciation. You may have heard it called Rahab, and that's kind of my habit, so that's the one I'm going to use. All right, now, here, this is the interpretation, is the first, as that slide says, of a good friend of mine, an Old Testament scholar named Dana Fuel. And what one of the things Dana does is she teaches people to pay attention to things that are right there in the Bible, but that most people don't notice. So that's what we're going to do a little bit about today. Okay? So next slide, please. Thank you. So what did Joshua tell the spies to do? What were they supposed to do? Go and check out what? The whole land, especially
Jericho.
Around Jericho. Okay, all right, good. Next. And what did they do? Right? What did they do? Oh, sorry, next slide. Oh, shoot. I thought I fixed it. Never mind. Can you guys remember what did they do? Joshua said, go spy out the whole land. And what did the two guys do? Where did they go? They went into Jericho. I guess you could say they snuck in.
They ended up at Rahab's house.
How did they know where the... I mean, they didn't had never met her, so they were looking for what? Yes. And so how did they know where to find it? No sign, no billboards, you know. How did they figure out how to get there?
They asked
around. If you have to ask around, what does that say about you? You ain't from around here. That's right. Someone told the king of Jericho, some Israelite spies have come here tonight to spy out the land. So the king of Jericho sent orders to Rahab, bring out the men who have come into your house, for they have come here to spy out the whole land. Okay, how did someone know that the men were Israelite spies? Probably. They had to ask directions to the brothel. B, they didn't talk like us. Okay? So, can you find the slide that says, yeah, that's it. What did Rahab do then? You probably can't. Nope. What did Rahab do then? You can probably remember even if it
hit him.
Right, under the flax. You know, when I was a kid in elementary school, we had to memorize the most thing that a country grew, and every country I ever had to memorize grew flax. I don't know. Anyway. So this woman had a bunch of flax that she was drying on the roof. Okay. And so then she told the people who came looking for them what? They used to be here, and I didn't know they weren't from here. But they left before the gates were about to close, and if you hurry, you can probably catch up with them. Okay, so the guys, somehow or another, believing that Rahab didn't know they were strangers, go out looking for the spies along the road leading to the Jordan, the other side of which is where all the Israelites, Joshua and all the Israelites were. Okay? So they go out. They figured, logically, that that's where they would be. So they go looking for him. And then the gates of Jericho were shut. The gate of Jericho was shut. So that meant that the guys couldn't sneak out. I mean, the gate was shut. Okay. So now, Rahab, why are the Israelites even in Canaan? I mean, about to come in. God did what? God promised them that they could come there. Why in the world did God promise them they could come and take over a country that belonged to other people? The other people were horrible people who worshipped terrible idols and were... next slide. And had brothels. And, you know, were just evil and perverted and horrible. Now, Rahab is one of these people. Okay? Rahab is a Canaanite. She's one of the people that's supposed to be replaced. Okay? So, what did she think of Yahweh, the God of Israel? What did she think of God? What was her opinion? What did she heard about the God of Israel?
Fearful.
She was fearful because
she heard stories. And he already...
She had heard stories about what God had done, which was yeah, but got rid of two whole other kings and all their people, and delivered the Israelites miraculously out of Egypt. She'd even heard that. Okay, so she says, no wonder we're terrified. For your God, here's what she says, the Lord your God is the supreme God of the heavens above and of the earth below. So this is Rahab's, you know, testimony about God. Notice that the spies, the Israelite guys, really don't have anything to say in this whole story yet. Okay. So, Rahab makes a deal with the spies. Can you find that one? Okay, never mind. There you go. All right. So, she says, okay, I've rescued you. She didn't say, at great risk to myself because, after all, I live here. But I've helped you, so swear to me that when, not if, you guys win, you will let me live along with my father, mother, brothers, and sisters, and all their families. So she's the one who's taking responsibility for the safety of her whole extended family. Okay, so the spies say, okay, we will be bound by the oath we have taken. We offer our lives as a guarantee for your safety. But when we come into the land, you have to leave this scarlet rope hanging from the window through which you let us down. This is, they say this after she's already let them down. So she has this scarlet rope. They're shouting. They're shouting from under the wall, yo, here's the deal. If you leave the scarlet rope hanging from the window, then we won't let anything happen to you and your family. They all have to be in the house. You know, this was herself, her father, her mother, her brothers and sisters, and all their families. So if all your people are inside the house, then it says we will accept the responsibility for their death. Which earlier they said, we offer our own lives as a guarantee for your safety. So presumably, if somebody by mistake kills these, 25 people, then, you know, you can kill us, only she'll already be dead. So, I mean, you know, there's not any, like, government capital punishment or anything like that. If I kill somebody in your family, then you chase me down and kill me. That's the way capital punishment was done. But if you betray us, we are not bound by this oath in any way. Or if you die by mistake, we're not bound by this oath in any way. So Rahab says, okay, I accept your terms. And she sent them on the way, and she left the scarlet rope, hanging from the window. All right, next, the spies report to Joshua. All right, so the spies report what? The Lord has given us the whole land, they said. All the people in the land are terrified of us. That was, of course, good news to Joshua and all the army. Now, they knew this because A or B?
B.
B. Right, exactly. I mean, they didn't spy out the whole land. They went straight into Jericho. Then they hid. So basically, they're taking Rahab's word for it. And so, fortunately, Rahab knew what she was talking about. All right, now, that and so the rest of the story is that Joshua led the people over the Jordan River. The Jordan River parted just like the Red Sea had parted. The Jordan River parted so that the Israelites could march through, and they marched around. God said, march around Jericho 7 times and with your banners showing what tribe you're from, and the priest will go first. I like this part. So they do that. 7 different days they march around the walls of Jericho. Here's a question that I didn't put up. Why do you think God gave them those particular instructions? March around the walls once every day for 7 days, and on the 7th day, the priest will blow the trumpets, and all of y'all yell real loud, and the walls will fall down. Why were those their battle instructions? Why not, for example, make some ladders? We're going to scale the wall, you know, put up some siege engines, because, you know, that sort of thing could be done. No, maybe not the siege engines, but certainly. Why not just surround them and starve them out? I mean, why did God tell them to do that? I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
So it showed that he's the one that won the battle.
Exactly. I mean, this is not the way you fight a battle, right? This is the way you demonstrate this, like ritual stuff. This is why you demonstrate that it's only God. God's the one that beat the Canaanites in the Battle of Jericho. Not Joshua. Not Joshua fit the Battle of Jericho, but God fit the battle. Okay? All right, now let's look at how Rahab comes out in the traditions. Yeah. In Hebrews, there's a long list of people who were known for their faith, the heroes of the faith. Hebrews chapter 11. And one of them is Rahab. It was by faith that Rahab the prostitute was not destroyed with the people in her city who refused to obey God. For she had given a friendly welcome to the spies. That's Hebrews. In James, James has a different emphasis. So he says, well, Rahab the prostitute is the one who is accepted because of her good works. That's kind of James's theme. He likes to say that faith without works is dead. So she might have believed, but the main thing was she did something. So that's James. Okay, let's look at the next one, Matthew. Now, this is interesting. Matthew, first chapter of Matthew has a long list of the ancestors of Jesus. Luke has it too, different lists. So, and in this list, we have this. Salmon was the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab. Boaz was the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth. Obed was the father of Jesse. Jesse was the father of King David, and so on, down to Joseph, who was the husband of Mary, the mother of Jesus. Now, the commentaries on the Gospel of Matthew say that it must be that Matthew intended this to be this Rahab that we're talking about, which is only to show the importance of Gentile women in the ancestry of Jesus, because all these women mentioned were Gentiles. But unfortunately, there's 200 years between Rahab and this guy she's supposed to have married. Now, of course, it could have been a different Rahab and a different Salmon or whatever. So we don't know that Matthew thought that was this Rahab, but if he did, she was kind of old. Okay. And now, next, the rabbis.
Is that the rabbis?
Yeah. Now, the rabbis said she married, that she became a Jew, and she married Joshua. And they had children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, including all these wonderful prophets. But we don't know that because we're not told who, if anybody, Joshua ever married. We're just told he was the son of Nun. But since it's Father's Day, I'll remind you that that was N-U-N. That was actually his father's name. Okay, he wasn't the son of nobody. Okay, and then some other Jewish texts say that Rahab spoke out for all the nations of the world. She was herself a Gentile, and that Rahab, you know, represented to God, I didn't get the details of this text, represented to God all the other nations who are not Jews and why, you know, they should be given a chance to convert to Judaism. Okay. All right, now, I don't think I have a slide for the next part, but this is just things for us to think about. Okay? Think a minute. You don't have to answer right away, but I'd just like some people's opinions. What do you think we could learn from this story? Now, I'm not saying this is what the writer Joshua intended for us to learn. I'm just saying, if we think about this story, what do you think is a lesson we could draw from this?
God uses whom he chooses.
God uses whom he chooses. That's right. Even me. Even you. All right, yes. God does not say, get your act together and maybe I can use you. Right? No. God uses whoever he wants to use in all their brokenness, since everybody's broken. Right? So, and God doesn't wait for people to clean up their act. Even morally, you know, right? So, actually, in that time and place, Rahab's profession was probably not considered as much immoral as it was just lower class, maybe. I don't know, you know. I mean, certainly the Israelites would have regarded it as, you know, terrible sin. So, now let's talk about people like Rahab today. Today, sometimes they're called prostitutes or other things, and sometimes they're called sex workers, okay? Why do all people who sell their bodies, do you think they all do it just because they really enjoy it? No. I'm not saying some people don't, all right? But a lot of people, where's Mary? Is she helping with the kids? Okay. Well, Mary is ministering to people who are in prison who have been trafficked. Okay, that's her. That's one of her many ministries. So, some people, even Americans, but especially people internationals, are promised, I can get you a good job if you just come to the big city. That's where the jobs are, and you come with me. And sometimes kids run away from home. Sometimes, especially people overseas, are starving. The whole family is starving. So the guy shows up and says, look, if you'll let your daughter come with me, I'll give you enough to feed your family. They, I hope, don't think of it as selling their daughter, you know. But the whole, it's either that or the whole family, you know, is going to starve. They're going to starve. This happens. I know about this happening in Thailand. I don't know where else it happens, right? So, so let us presume that most or many people who feed themselves or their drug habit, which they got into from the people who brought them to town to get a good job, all right, got them addicted. I mean, if that's the way you were making your living, would you need something to take the edge off? I mean, if you were making your living selling your body to strangers, would you need something to kind of forget that's what you were doing? So, so let's think about these people and ask ourselves, based on this Bible passage, do you think all the people who are sex workers are don't believe in God? Think they're all atheists just because that's what they're doing? No? No, I don't think so. At least Rahab wasn't even a Canaanite religious person. She was a worshiper of Yahweh, right? So, do you think they cry out to God in the middle of the night? Well, no, sorry, in the middle of the day.
Yes.
Yeah. God, get me out of this. Okay. If Mary, if such people were to get out of prison and Mary brought them to church, what kind of a church would we need to be to make people like that think God had maybe heard their prayers? Show love. Welcoming. Open-minded. Delighted to see them. I have to say, this is the way you guys treat everybody, right? That's why I'm here, right? I know Mary could really use help in the prisons where she goes. It's very safe. I mean, and she can tell you the details. Of course, you have to have training. But how do you think these women, they're women, she works with women, these women would feel if somebody came and said, I just want to be your friend, tell me about your life. Not, you know, why are you an immoral person or how did you get into this? But tell me who you are, you know. And I don't know what else Mary does, but just she befriends people. What you probably know something about it. What else happens in this ministry?
Yeah, that's it. She asks about the life. She prays with them. Sometimes she'll bring up just a topic from the Bible and see if they want to talk about it. They don't.
Yeah.
30 minutes of connection.
Right. So, any other thoughts?
I should say most of them have a very aware, like, spirituality. They all of them have read the Bible.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's something that's
almost universal, yeah. Yeah. So she's probably dealing with mostly Americans or Hispanics who have a Bible, or if they're immigrants or refugees or whatever. This is often, by the way, this is the welcome that refugees get in this country. You know, you don't have any papers, but we'll give you a job. All right, well, any other thoughts before we... Yes, Joey.
Just the interpretation that you're sharing, or the even just illuminating what's already there in the text, is making me think about the uphill battle that Rahab or Rahab might have had to connect with her family. Like, just presuming maybe, like, she might not have actually had a strong connection with her family, either because of her profession or where she was at in society. So for her to, like, stand up and say, I want my parents to...
with
me.
Like, wow.
That was something that she wanted, but I'm just presuming that it might have taken some convincing for them to leave her.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
It reminds me of Noah in the ark, that he asked Lake to say, like, come with me, but no one wants to come.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I was also surprised by the mention of, like, and my family, because of, like, so many people who get in really bad situations because they don't have any. So that was just surprising to me.
Yeah.
Whatever that dynamic was.
Right. Right. So hopefully, after she saved their lives, they thought a little better of her. You know? Yeah?
That was something that I thought about, too, is that anytime you bring up Rahab, you're like, oh, yeah, the prostitute. That's what she's known for, which is so unfortunate. That, you know, she's like, also rescued my whole family.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we tend to do that with people. We identify them by their vice or their issue or whatever, instead of like, no, you are, there is more to you than just this one part of who you are or this thing you've fallen into or whatever. So how about Rahab, the person who saved her whole family? Maybe we should start calling her something.
Yeah. The rabbis were, because they decided she married Joshua, they were a little embarrassed about her profession, so they decided that the word could mean innkeeper. And, you know, there was often it's not implausible, because that's one of the things that you could get in an inn. In those days. That is why, by the way, this is totally off topic, that is why Paul and his missionaries that he trained always made arrangements to stay in somebody's house. Well, Jesus tried to do that too, because you didn't stay in the places where you could stay. You know, not if you were Jesus or a missionary or something like that. Okay? It wasn't safe. B, it wasn't good for your reputation.
It's always bothered me that, like you said, these men met Rahab somehow, but yet they're considered the good people in the room, and she's considered not. You know, like that's
right.
That's always bothered me.
Right, exactly. And you know, I'm not trying to. Put down either men or Israelites, but it's just that when you look at the contrast between, you know, what the spies did and what Rahab did, it's pretty stark, you know. I mean, so.
I think it's a redemptive story. I think if it's you're highlighting a prostitute who might have been in the lineage of Jesus.
Yeah.
That is the ultimate redemption.
Yeah.
Brokenness.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And who, whatever Israelite married her, Joshua or Salmon or any whoever, that shows that somebody took her conversion to being a worshiper of Yahweh really serious. They thought, okay, this lady's serious. She must have demonstrated by her life, you know, the fruits of being a worshiper of God. All right. Well...